This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening. If you are maybe just discovering us for the first time and dipping your toe into OTI, go back and fill your alcohol-free boots. We've got Series 1, we've got Series 2, and this is Series 3, the series that started and never ended. It will continue until the end of actual time. A quick reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Everybody calls me Shaz. 1,700 and something days alcohol free in September, which is a bit off yet, I realise that, but it'll be 5 years. 5 years! Sounds ridiculous. I only ever wanted to take a break from booze, you know, to show that obviously I didn't have a problem because, you know, not drinking, it was going to be boring, crap, dull, and everything else that goes with it. It turns out the polar opposite was actually true. Fell in love with a sober life, and it's just fabulous. So that's why this podcast exists. It's why our community exists, so we can share with other people the rather unexpected joys of sobriety. I could wang on for ages, so I'm going to stop because we have got a lovely guest waiting in the wings. Before we get to our guest this week, Ben Anderson, how the hell are you?
Right, hi Shaz. I'm Ben, I'm 34, live in Liverpool. Been alcohol free for nearly 3 years now. Gonna be honest, in a bit of a slump. I think I need the podcast today. We didn't record last week because we'd recorded loads and loads and loads of episodes. We had loads of them backed up and I was getting all confused about what date we were releasing them. And so we had a break last week. I don't know, I just feel a bit, I don't have the same kind of va-va-voom.
Oh, yeah. Hello, 1984.
That's the best way, my mojo is a bit low at the moment. My alcohol-free cup is a bit empty.
It needs filling, doesn't it?
Or is it just hot? I don't know. It might just be hot.
It's only like the first hot weekend of the actual year. We cannot start this episode by bleating about the weather. Although no, it's too hot in this recording.
It's too hot.
Yeah.
No, I'm, of course, I am hugely grateful to be alcohol free. It's changed a lot of things in my life. I think just sometimes, you know, even when you're a few years into this, you need your cup filling up a little bit. And that's how I feel this week. And I hope that isn't too much of a somber intro for our guest. In fact, Sharon, back to you to do the kind of, you know, from boring, sad old Ben over here to...
Well, it just seems she's still here. She might have just pressed leave Zoom. Yeah. She might have just nubbed off after that intro. Olivia Farrelly, based in Dublin. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to Over the Influence today. How the heck are you? Hopefully feeling a little bit better than Ben.
I'm great. Really good. Yeah, no, it's lovely and hot here in Dublin as well. So I am a very cold creature, so I think the heat does me well. But yeah, no, I'm a tiny bit ahead of you, Sharon. I'm 5 years alcohol free on the 4th of July.
Amazing.
So yeah, so I am, my friends call me the sobriety propaganda queen. So I can never stop shouting about how happy, fulfilled, passionate and motivated I've become since giving up alcohol. It has been the greatest gift of my life. It really has. It's just changed my life immensely.
Oh,
it's been incredible. Yeah,
I knew you'd be a great fit for Over the Influence. I really did. It's lovely to have you. Can I just say, for the purposes of our listener, you look amazing on this Zoom. I look like I've been dragged through a hedge. I'm actually wearing, I don't know who this I just found it on the floor at home. I don't know who it belongs to. A family member. I'm wearing stained shorts.
All right.
And my HRT patches are coming off because my legs are that sweaty. So welcome.
You know what?
Olivia.
I'm wearing a fancy top, but I'm wearing a pair of sweaty Betty's underneath it. And I just put on a lip liner, and my kids even got a shock when they saw me, and I put a curl for my hair. Now I don't usually look like this on a Tuesday.
You look amazing. You really do. I look absolutely atrocious. Please, please don't judge. We're gonna put it down to the heat. Olivia, we've got so much to talk about. Love the fact that you call yourself the grey area drinker. We need to talk about what that means. For people that maybe have never heard the term before. You're approaching 5 years alcohol free.
Yeah, so the 4th of July, I think that's kind of apt. I do say that I was reborn on the 4th of July. It feels a bit like part of my life before that died and I became a new person. I know that might sound a bit intense, but there was a lot of kind of build up for that. Will I just launch into it?
Yeah, you can, but please don't forget the bit about how this all came to you in a dream, because I just think that's the most amazing. We've never heard that before on this podcast.
So have you not?
Yeah, and it's really, really funny. So like, I'm Irish. We drink, right? The majority of people drink. We're internationally renowned for drinking. We love crack. We're very, no, C-R-A-I-C. We love crack.
Yes.
We're really sociable. Like, it's what we do, right? So I was no different to anybody else. So I drank for a long time. It affected me a lot. I got really bad hangovers, really bad depression, really bad and really bad anxiety after drinking. In bouts, like, there was good times, there was bad times, there was okay times. But yeah, so one night on the 30th of November 2017, I had a dream, and the dream appeared to be a message. Now, this is where it gets a little bit weird. It came from the form of Jesus, right? I had never had a dream like that before. Nothing had ever been said.
Are you a religious person?
No, not at
right.
all.
Okay.
I'm Catholic by my religion, but I haven't, listen, I'm the lapsed Catholics who has ever lapsed. so, not really a churchgoer, not really somebody who would be incredibly religious at all. And it came in a dream. And because it was in that form, I woke up the next morning and I was like, what is this? So I turned over to my husband and I went, Gary, I've just got a message in my dream. I stopped for 30 days. So that morning was the 1st of December. I stopped drinking for 31 days over December, and then started on New Year's Eve when I found we went to a lovely hotel and there was a Singapore Sling there. And I just thought that as a sign to start drinking again, because like, I didn't have a problem. And, I had done the whole 31 days alcohol free. So I started, and that was fine. And then kind of over the next 7 months, there was I had drank maybe about 5 or 6 times over those 7 months. All of them had been kind of ended in a little bit of catastrophe and, having to be put to bed and all those kind of stuff. And then we were at a wedding in Spain, in Nerca, and just something really powerful came over me. I don't know what it was. I think in those months leading up to it, I built all this energy. I had just become so... I had fallen really out of love with it, basically. And I had fallen really out of love with all the anxiety. And it didn't prove worth it. It wasn't worth it at that stage. And then I just handed him a drink. We were on a mountaintop at a wedding. And I handed him a half full gin and tonic. And I said, this will be the last drink that I ever drink. And in that moment, I really felt like it. Like, it really was. It was so intense, that feeling that came over me. I handed it to him and it was the last drink I've ever drank. So it was just a really powerful moment. It just felt there was a full moon. There was just, it just felt like there was something really intense happening.
think that's really interesting. In terms of a moment, what you're saying is that you hadn't kind of planned, right, that will be the last event, that will be the date in the diary. It's a Sunday, or, you know, so I can start fresh on the Monday. It was literally in the moment you went, right.
In the moment.
Now.
Yeah.
Tell me about that moment more. Like what was that intense feeling?
Okay, I'll go back to, so we had very young kids at the time, right? My husband is not a big drinker. He's a beautiful, calm, mannerly drinker. He is the person who can have one drink and it nothing inside him makes him want more. Everything inside me makes me want more when I have one drink, right?
Yeah.
One was never enough. Neither was three or four or five. But anyway, so we had gone to Spain for a wedding. The kids were at home being minded by my parents. We had gone wild, like we were in a nightclub. Like I was, 37 at that stage. We were in a nightclub. It was great crack. We were all his family. They were all great. And then I had overdrank and I got drunk twice in one day the day before. So I'd been drunk in the morning and drunk in the, gone for a snooze and then filled up that night. So that morning I had probably the worst, I had a panic attack basically. So the day of the wedding, I'd had a panic attack in the bed. I had been fully sure that was the day that I was going to die. I really can't emphasize that enough. I thought that my children would be motherless and that I would be brought home from Spain in a body bag because my hangover had produced such anxiety, heart palpitations, panic, sheer panic. So I had to get up and get ready for the wedding, went and had a pina colada just to settle the nerves. And I know that's not something that you should do. You should never really drink the day after. Like in kind of, that was maybe about 11, half 11 in the morning. That kind of steadied me, went on, drank a lot at the wedding in terms of like we had a couple of glasses of wine. And then I had a few gins. And then I don't remember anything kind of preceding it except this incredibly intense feeling of this is it. I'm done. I can never do what I did today. Like I can never put myself through the anxiety, the regret, the shame. Like there's not just one incident of shame, as you know, across a drinking career. There's 40,000 and they build and they build and they build. And I was so sick of listening to myself, the self-loathing, the destruction, the despair, like the panic. I was just so finished. I was so done. I couldn't live in that space again. Do you know the way we kind of nearly have two parts of us? But I couldn't live with that part of me anymore. And that was it. And then I came home after that and I'm so determined. Like a determination I've never felt before or since, that this was it. And like that was 2018, and there just didn't feel like there was the intense sober community that there is now. Like there wasn't many people doing it. At the time, I knew one person who didn't drink, but she had never drank in her life before. Now I know loads of people who don't drink. So it just felt like this kind of barren wasteland that I was kind of navigating myself. Because, like, nobody I knew, and I live in Ireland, there's very few people who choose not to drink. It's just like, it's part of the culture, it's part of who we are, it's part of our national identity. And then I came home and decided to, like, not be part of that anymore. So that was kind of, that was a bit difficult or whatever. But listen, it's worked out for the best. I'm the happiest I've ever been. I'm the most fulfilled. I'm the most passionate, motivated, enthusiastic. Like it has just, something within me has shifted and I've become the person that I always thought I would be, but that alcohol prevented me from being.
Shaz, your day one, I suppose, did you build up to it? Like we didn't have that moment that Olivia's talking about,
yeah,
where
so
it's like, this is going to be forever.
In June of 2018, I did a 30-day stint and I thought, right, okay, did that, need to do longer. And this is, you know, years and years of doing like failing at dry January, half-arsing, sober October. So in 2018, I sort of planted the seed, but I knew I needed to do longer than 30 days. So in the September of 2018, and it was the day the kids went back. I can remember it like it was yesterday, because the Monday came after a final day of day drinking on the Sunday, and I woke up thinking, no, no more. But for me, it was very much, you know, Olivia, you get the kids back to school, new bags, new pencil cases, new start, it's September. It felt right, this is it. But I was only ever aiming for 90 days. Of course it wasn't going to be forever. Why the hell would anybody want to stop drinking forever? No, that was not on the cards. It was just having a break. But like you, started doing it, you know, navigating whatever social event, you know, my son's 18th, we had a christening, all this sort of seemed to happen in the first few weeks of me taking this break from alcohol. And as you've described there, not one aspect of life didn't begin to improve. And you're like, oh, shit, I didn't want this to work. It's true what they say. So I didn't have like a moment of realization that this was going to be forever. I think that came much, much later on. You know, I'm talking a couple of years into this, but I did know there was a moment of realization that I needed to take a flipping break from alcohol. I'm very much like you, Olivia. Everything changed, like everything. Yeah.
I describe it as the most seismic shift in my entire life. Like, I'm fairly fit. Like, I done a marathon. I run sometimes. I do boot camp. Like, I'm generally quite fit in terms of, and I try to eat healthily. But, like, I've done everything, right? I've been vegan. I've been vegetarian. I've been pescatarian. I've done fasts, water fasts, intermittent fasting. Absolutely everything. I've tried it, right? Nothing comes close to the changes that will come from removing one thing in your life. One thing. I do kind of think, was I a bit stupid for 23 years? Because alcohol made me lazy. It made me regret. It made me say things I didn't mean. Made me make really bad life decisions. It made me vomit for 12 hours. It made me feel like shit, anxiety, absolutely everything. Yet it never dawned on me, because it's so intrinsic in our culture. It never dawned on me. And my husband used to say to me, if I got the hangovers you get, I wouldn't drink. But it never dawned on me until it literally had to be popped in my head by whatever. But that's
Jesus.
The only time. What?
About Jesus.
And yet that sounds so weird, because, and you know, I remember I like going to psychics. I like a bit of the, you know, spiritual, bit of the supernatural or whatever. And I remember a psychic saying to me once, she was like, that was divine intervention in your life. That was somebody guiding you in a way that this is the way your life needed to go. And it was, and I followed it. And like, I don't really follow instruction. And like, there's a lot of behaviors I want to change in my life now that I can't. But just with that, it just seemed like it was meant to be. And the things that the growth, the emotional growth, the evolution, just, I'm a completely different person now. Like, I have integrity, and like, I'm diligent. And if I say I'll be somewhere, I'll be somewhere. Like, there's no more flakiness. You know, it's just, there's so many advantages that, like, if I got €1 million tomorrow in a check, I genuinely mean this, I wouldn't take it if the stipulation was to go back on the booze. I'd say, keep your money, I'm grand. You know, because you can't buy the serenity and the peace that I now feel in comparison to the shit fest that was my life when I hung over, you know.
And like, shit fest. It's just such a great way, of describing life when you're in the thick of boozing.
But it was, it really was. And the gas thing was, like, you look at me and I don't, like, I wasn't a problematic drinker in terms of, I have a really functional life, I have a great job, I have family, I drive a car, I've never got done for drink driving, I've never lost a job, I've never lost friendships. Like, it wasn't calamitous, but internally, all the psychological, you know, disadvantages were just really, really, really hard.
Olivia, so in a just over a month then, you'll be 5 years alcohol free.
Oh, yeah.
It's cool,
oh,
it's cool when you look at it like that, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Look at the diary. Oh, just over a month.
Yeah.
Do you ever need your alcohol free cup topping up? Do you always feel positive and passionate and motivated and this and that? And
of course I don't, Ben. Okay. No, of course. No, I do feel like this a good 90% of the time. The only time that I've ever kind of felt unconnected, I'll say, is when I'm out on a night out and I'll see people, you know, I'll see all those barriers down and I'm not drinking, right? But I'll see them, right? And they'll be like, they'll say things that are really, they just get maybe a little bit funnier, a little bit closer. You might feel on the periphery of it a little bit, but then the next morning when they're all getting sick and in bits, then I'm like, oh, it fades, you know? So I just don't think I could ever go back to who I was. This feels so good now that I could never go back, because the benefits now are totally outweighed, you know?
I get that about the AF Cup needing filling up occasionally. You can feel, I think, on the periphery, particularly if you're back in the thick of what you used to do, you know, how you used to be as a drinker. I think it can be tricky. I think that's because it is so different to where you are now. I still feel it myself, and that's not a case of missing drinking at all. As you said, I wouldn't trade it for the freaking world. I just know. But it's sometimes a reminder, isn't it, that choosing sobriety, it's not always a smooth path. It can be tricky. And I think that's a really important thing as well to say is I know some people have, and probably still do, you know, judge my choices now. Oh, isn't it a shame Shaz can't drink? No, you don't get it. I can do what I want when I want, you know. I'm just choosing not to now. It's just hard sometimes. I don't want to go on too much about it because we do sing about sobriety, it's a tricky path sometimes.
Yeah. And I think when you do have a reputation as somebody who's really good fun and like, oh, up for anything, then people have then this view about people who don't drink. They think that they're strange. They think that they're, and like, it's, you know, that they've gone weird and that they're not one of us anymore. And I really felt that at the beginning, that people thought that I had changed, but nothing had changed. You know, all I had decided to do was to stop drinking, you know, and that was hard. And like, there was a couple of things that I wasn't invited to at the beginning. Now, you know, like now it's much easier because everybody knows and they accept it and all that kind of stuff. But before, it was really, really hard, you know. And I don't know, you're somebody who's changing the culture, you know, of your maybe little friend group or whatever. So it's all obviously hard for the first person in a group who does that. Now, there's like, I was a big boozer in university, so were all of my friends, you know. We were fantastic fun. But now two of those girls that I went to university with aren't drinking. Sorry, three of them. So there's four of us in total. So like, we're all seeing each other and we're going, oh, like if she can do what I can do.
Yeah.
And then like, if we go for like to a hen or a wedding, we're there together and we're providing support for each other. And like, we could drink, you know. And then we were, I know you talk about like the culture back in the 90s, and I was part of that in Ireland as well. And there was this big push towards like all the alcohol pops and then Pink My Drink. And like, we were marketed too heavily, so like it was hard to escape. It's really hard to escape drinking, the culture of it, and you know, it's just what everybody does.
Yeah, it is. It's like swimming against the tide sometimes, but keep swimming we shall. Yeah. I want to talk about what you've based your Instagram on, which is, you describe yourself as a grey area drinker. Okay, there'll be people listening to this.
I'm looking through it now while we're talking. There's so much great stuff on here, Olivia.
Oh, thanks, Steph.
And some people, they won't have a clue what that term means. You know, from speaking from my own personal experience, there was absolutely sweet F.A. grey about my drinking. It was just every day and lots of it and very, very quickly. Now grey about it. I drank too much, too quickly, and far too often. How do you define grey area drinking, and what does that look like?
Yeah, so I didn't know what to call myself when I gave up drinking. I was willing to use alcoholic, but it just never felt right. So I was listening to, you know, the way your podcasts roll into other podcasts or whatever. So I was driving home from work one day, and Jolene Park, a functional nutritionist from America, came on, and she was talking about this term grey area drinking. And I literally nearly crashed the car, because it described exactly the way I drank. Okay. So if you think of drinking on a spectrum, right? For one, on one end of the spectrum, it's like somebody who can take it or leave it. So classic example, my husband, he can have one drink, he can have two drinks. He could not drink until the end of the year, wouldn't bother him. You know, I have two sister-in-laws who are exactly the same as them. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have people at the end of, let's say, alcohol use disorder, you know, maybe street drinkers or people who are, their lives are completely powerless to alcohol. So then she came up with the term, and she describes everybody else in this grey area in the middle. So grey area drinkers are people who basically, they can refrain from drinking, probably for long space of time. But when they do drink, they can't just have one. One leads to two, three, four. Their drinking doesn't look problematic to other people, but they feel that it's problematic internally. They have things like anxiety, depression. They get really, really bad feelings after alcohol, but it doesn't look like that to everybody else. So it might feel difficult to know that they have a problem. So they have all these feelings, yet they don't feel powerless over alcohol. And I think that's probably, they can't moderate either, so they just can't have one or two. They set a lot of rules around their drinking and don't stick to the rules. But I think probably the thing is that they can and they do give up for specific bouts of time, you know. And that definitely felt like me. So, oh my God, it was just such a light bulb that went off in my head when I realized, oh my God, there's a term for this. And I know a lot of people use it as well. And, you know, I think probably the old way of looking at it is that you're either an alcoholic or you're not an alcoholic, I think does a lot of disservice to people, the whole labeling of it, because, you know, a lot of people would say, well, I don't have a problem. I'm not an alcoholic. Sorry, they would think they don't have a problem when they might, you know, that being an alcoholic, okay, you drink in the morning, drink vodka, you hide it in the cistern of the top toilet. And because they don't display those behaviours, they don't think that they have a problem. When, I'm sure, as we say all the time, alcohol is a problem if it's causing problems in your life, you know. So I just think that maybe it's a different way to look at things, and it might help people, and there's maybe a lot less stigma attached to the whole term than there is with maybe being an alcoholic or not an alcoholic. Or it's an area I think that people need to maybe look at a bit more.
We're just going to take a quick break from this fabulous chat with lovely Olivia. What a fantastic woman. Loads more still to come as well with Olivia. But before we get back to that, just a quick reminder, it is happening this Sunday. Ben, do you like podcasts?
I do. In fact, podcasts are my life, Sharon.
That's really, really good to know. And also, Ben, yeah. do you like pizza?
I mean, pizza is my life, Sharon. Yes, I own a pizza oven that I'm going to be getting out a lot this summer.
You do.
Yeah, I'm not getting it out on Sunday, though. I'm going to let someone else. I'm going to make a professional make the pizzas on Sunday, but I can make them.
So we've established that you like pizza, and we've established that you love podcasts. If we brought the two together and did podcast and pizza in a city centre location, would you like that as well?
I mean, it's like Christmas in the summer for me, that, you know?
Well!
What can make it better? You know what can make it better, actually? How about free mocktail on arrival?
That is one of my
can
most
we integrate
favorite
that?
Things. Yeah.
Well, it's just getting better then.
It's just getting better. In fact, let's make it even better. So okay. If you like an AF cocktail and you like
yes, I do.
Podcasts.
Yeah,
and you like pizza. Mm-hmm. Right, this might be the clincher here. Do you like me?
I do. I mean, you know, we've got to know each other quite well over the last few years, and you're in my life a lot because obviously we record two podcasts a week, and then have to edit those podcasts. Yeah. I'm basically constantly always listening to your voice.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. And thank you, Ben, for tolerating me. Thank you. I do appreciate that.
Well, I can do such a good impression of you because I've just listened to so many hours.
AF cocktail, pizza, podcasts, me and Ben. To me, there's no better way to spend a Sunday afternoon. We would love you to get involved, and it's happening in your old stomping ground.
Yeah, this Sunday in Birmingham. Oh, how are we, Birmingham? Hello, Birmingham! I'm born and raised in Birmingham. Went to school in Edgbaston, lived in Harbour, lived in the Jewellery Quarter. I love it. One of the best cities on planet Earth, Birmingham. And this place we're going to is lovely. This actually used to be a place where I'd go and drink, but we've chosen this place because they've got a brilliant alcohol-free menu. And of course, they do pizzas. It's Lost and Found.
Lost and Found, Birmingham City Centre, not too far away from Birmingham New Street train station.
Yes, really, like 5 minute walk from New Street.
Amazing. Really, really good.
Yeah.
We've still got a few tickets left. These are for our community members. These are for you listening now. If you enjoyed the pod, if you are an OTI super fan, if you're feeling like a bit of a sober lone ranger, come along, get involved. So many people.
Loads of people are coming.
They're coming
on
by
their own
themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's great because, you know, lots of people are in the same boat. Come and meet. You know, they might not have partners who are alcohol-free, for example, friends who are alcohol-free. This is it. Load of sober lone rangers in Birmingham this weekend, this Sunday. If you're not doing anything this Sunday, what are you doing? And of course, you can do whatever you want on Monday because you're not going to have a bloody hangover, are you?
Amazing. So, so good. Yeah. It's happening this Sunday in Birmingham. Lost and Found, as Ben said there. £25 a ticket. You are more than welcome to join us. And if you don't fancy coming on your own, that's absolutely not a problem as well. You can bring an AF friend. Bring somebody that is maybe sober curious. But please just always remember that all our OTI events, they are completely and utterly alcohol-free. £25 a ticket. If you're interested, you need to email me today. Get it done today. OTI HQ. At overtheinfluence.co.uk. It all starts at 12 midday on Sunday and runs through until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. OTI HQ at overtheinfluence.co.uk. Right, enough wanging on about pizza and podcast. Let's get back to the chat with Olivia.
Can I read you a post from our forum, Olivia?
Yeah.
It was posted about a week ago. We'd like to protect the identities of our community members. So this is from B in Ireland. B says, so it'll be 2026 before it comes into effect, but it's written into the law. As from today, I'm so proud. Changes take time, but my country has been ravaged by generational addictions and traumas. This is the first step in making the next generation question the insane conditioning of generations before them. Ireland, of course, Olivia, is to become the first country to have warning labels on alcohol. It came in, the law was stamped, signed, done a couple of weeks back. It's going to properly take effect from 2026. How does that make you feel?
It's amazing. It really is. It's absolutely phenomenal. And you know, I was living in the UK. I did a master's in Stoke-on-Trent when the smoking ban came in. And Ireland, again, was one of the first countries to start that. And look, so many countries have followed suit. You know, it's phenomenal. And listen, there's obviously going to be a lot of pushback, you know, from other countries and from obviously the alcohol industry. But it's a really positive step. It's a really positive message, isn't it? And when one person decides, or one country, I often think of countries as having personalities, but when one country decides to do something, it starts an avalanche or a domino effect, and everybody then follows suit. Like, there's so many studies that are coming out now, like there was the Global Burden of Disease study a couple of years ago, and then Canada are rewriting their advice on what are minimum, like what you should be drinking. And there feels like there's a wave of research and a wave of studies and stuff coming to the fore now that people are like, okay, if you keep seeing messaging about alcohol and that it's detrimental to health and it certain cancers and heart disease and stroke and stuff like that, I think the message is kind of getting out there now, isn't it?
Think so. I mean, yeah. What's the reception been like in Ireland?
In Ireland, yeah. And well, listen, anything that I've seen has been really, really positive. I think probably people are proud because the smoking ban, that was really successful back, 2005, 2006, something like that. And then I think it's a similar kind of feeling now. Of course you're going to get pushback. Of course people are going to say, like it's grand or whatever. And of course it's going to be lots of different opinions, but I do imagine that most people kind of see the sense behind it and would be really enthusiastic about it.
I think it's great. I think it's brilliant.
Is Olivia right? Are we going to see other countries follow suit?
Olivia's hopeful. The reality,
we've talked about this on our premium podcast, haven't we? Because,
okay.
You know,
okay.
Well, there's obviously some upset European countries. Now, can you guess which are the most upset about the fact that Ireland are putting warning labels on alcohol from 2026? Spain are upset. Yeah. Italy are upset. Have you got any idea why these huge wine-making regions might be upset?
Yeah.
Have you read some of the quotes from... There's a guy from the Italian Farmers Union who's come out and he said, this is a dangerous precedent. This is a dangerous precedent in terms of consumer choice. So offering consumers information about what they're consuming is very dangerous, Olivia. According to this fella from the Italian Farmers Union. You've then got the people in Ireland who've actually made this law happen, basically coming out and saying, well, we've been doing this with other food stuff for years. We've been telling you all sorts of nutritional information about your noodles.
Exactly.
Or your packet of crisps. So why can't we do it with alcohol?
Exactly. And you've had Professor David Nutt on. I love him.
We did.
Oh, he's amazing. He's so
interesting fella.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
He just gives the advice and he says, do what you want with that advice. Make up your own mind. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but this is the research. And didn't he say that if alcohol was to be introduced as a food in the food chain now, that it would only half a glass per year would be allowed enter our food
per
chain.
Year.
Half a glass per year.
That sounds like
my husband's drinking levels.
Yeah. He did talk to us about, if it was, I mean, this is why he got sacked, wasn't it? All those years ago, by David Cameron's government.
Exactly, because he said that it was more dangerous than...
everything.
Yeah.
Everything,
yeah,
according to Professor David Nutt.
Yeah.
He just spent, his entire life's work looking at this stuff. But,
Exactly.
Believe me, you want to believe. David Nutt or the fella who helps Italian farmers?
It'd be interesting. I think we're in a very interesting time, aren't we? Because we've never, it's always been put to us that obviously we're the problem because we can't drink properly. So it'll be a really interesting time now that the tide is kind of changing and there's all this research and, different information coming, and that people, I suppose, we're in a technological age where you can find out what you want to find out and you can live the way you want to live. And I think for me, anyway, it has just been so incredibly powerful, every last bit of it, that I can't but try and shout it from the rooftops. And you know what as well? There's a lot of people, I did another podcast a couple of months ago and a lot of people, especially Irish people, contacted me and they were like, oh, you're so brave to show your face, to say that you were a problematic drinker, because we tend to not do that. We really care as Irish people what the next person thinks. But it's my truth. Do you know what I mean? It's how I drank. I drank. It was a problem. Caused a lot of problems in my life. As I said earlier, it was a bit of a shit fest. But now that it's gone, all them problems are gone.
Olivia, when people listen to this podcast, and our premium podcast as well, I'm really aware of the fact that we are super positive. Of course we are. And, you know, remove one thing, as Ben says a lot, you just gain so much more. But it's almost, I think, impossible to believe what we're saying whilst you're still in the thick of it. I wouldn't have believed it. I'd have said, shut up, what a crock of shit. Absolute.
Yeah. You're saying that because you've done this and you have to try and force yourself to believe it now. That's exactly the kind of thing I would have got. You're telling yourself this because you can't drink.
Yeah.
You know?
I know if I was listening to this podcast in my drinking days, obviously there's something been pricked there. If I'd have been listening to a sober podcast thinking, you know, the sober curiosity, maybe I'll take a break. Whatever. There are people listening to this that are still drinking and they won't believe what we're saying, because why would they? Because alcohol, well, it lies, doesn't it? And it covers up everything, and it's deceitful, and it just blurs so much. And I'm really conscious of the fact that we want to go, but tell you the truth. Honestly, as you've described it, this change that comes is seismic. It is utterly life-changing. What do you say to somebody listening now that's like, yeah, whatever. You've Ben just said, you've got to tell yourself that, haven't you? How do you get that across to people that might struggle to believe that actually it is that good?
I think that if they're listening to this, there's something within them that's telling them this. So that there's a still quiet voice. We all have it. Our lives are always trying to talk to us. I really do think that. So like, I know Oprah has always said, your life throws you a pebble and then another pebble, and it keeps throwing you pebbles until you actually pay attention to it. I describe it as a pebble, a brick. I had pebbles being thrown at me for years, and then I got a brick in the face. Okay. So it's, if you're listening to this, you know that something within you wants this to happen. Okay. So I would say the thing that probably kept me, especially in the beginning, right, was the listening to all the podcasts, reading all the Quitlet, like doing a little bit of meditation, journaling about how I felt, really getting my feelings out there, looking at things like emotional regulation. So instead of reaching for the bottle, how can I pause, reflect, and do something differently? How can I do things differently? So like, and a lot of people drink to cope. I drank to connect. I loved the feeling of connecting with my friends or my husband or over a cheese board, all very civil, lovely things, right? But again, as I said earlier, really enthusiastic drinker, obviously drank too much. But a lot of people do drink to cope with the stresses. Like they drink to either forget something, to stop feeling something or to start feeling something. So like just untangle, if you can, just begin to untangle, write down on a piece of paper, why do I drink? What do I drink to start feeling, or what do I drink to stop feeling something? I think it's a good way to kind of explore fully the reasons why you drink. Is it because it's just something that I do? It's something that I've always done. You know, it's just untangling from that really intense culture of alcohol that we're all in, you know, and the lies that we've been told, the lies we've told ourselves, you know, maybe to start with that.
Coming right back to the beginning of this, you went, right, I love pebble, brick. I suppose, do you need brick to be able to make that final choice?
No, God, not at all. Especially, well, I don't think so. Not nowadays anyway, because like when I came back from Spain, there was nobody around me, I felt. There was nobody I could kind of turn to. Now there is so many people. Everybody's coming out of the woodwork to say, I'm not drinking, it's amazing. I'm not drinking, it's amazing.
Spider-Man sober now. You seen
exactly.
that, Olivia?
Exactly. Tom
How
Holland.
Cool is that?
Yeah.
Spider-Man doesn't drink. He hasn't drank for 16 months.
Exactly. Like everybody, there's so many people flying the flag. And like you said there, Shaz, like, please believe us. I actually took that from one of your earlier podcasts. Actually, it was the one with Laura and the cow in it. And you were like, please believe us when we tell you. Please believe us when we tell you this will be the greatest thing that you will ever do. It will produce the most changes. It will cause the greatest evolution of your life. It will make you become the person you've always wanted to be. And it's just removing one thing. Forget green juice, forget marathons, whatever. Knock the sauce on the head. And I swear to God, your life will be incredibly better.
What a way to end. I don't think we need to add to that at all. Olivia, thank you so much. We've mentioned your Instagram during the course of this episode. If anybody wants to follow you, find out a little bit more about what you do, where can they do that, Olivia?
So my Instagram account is at grey area drinker, G-R-E-Y.
Olivia, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thanks, guys. That's amazing. Thank you.
That was fabulous. If I do say so myself, really, really.
She's just great,
it's
isn't
tragic,
she?
Isn't it, to say like that? It's so good.
Yeah, my alcohol-free cup has definitely been topped up by Olivia's just enthusiasm. Yeah. For not just alcohol-free life, just every aspect of life in general.
She's just lovely. She's just lovely. In fact, yeah. I wish she was joining us this Sunday. We would have so much to
She's slick.
Talk about.
She's good. She's good.
I see what
you know,
did
we have
there.
Got people flying into Birmingham. You know, this weekend. We've got Kelly coming from Scotland. Oh, we've got Shah coming from Gibraltar. She told me on Zoom this morning.
Amazing.
Shah's coming from Gibraltar, which is brilliant. We've also got Helen coming from Bahrain.
That's ridiculous.
You know, isn't it nuts?
I mean, I hope the pizza's good. I hope she likes our company.
God.
Flipping heck.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a long way to travel.
Pizza and podcasts. It's this week. Well, it's great because Shah, can you believe it? It's just the stars align. She's working in Birmingham on Monday and Tuesday next week.
Perfect.
And obviously our event's on Sunday.
So Sunday. Good. So good. And you know
so,
what?
Yeah, just got work to book an extra night. Sorry, go on.
No, I know it's really good for our members because as we've already explained, if you're coming on your own, you're feeling a little bit isolated in the early stages of sobriety, it's just a great way to connect and, you know, feel completely and utterly normal. It's also fantastic for me and thee. It's so good to finally put faces to names. No, hang on, that's wrong. Hang on.
Yeah.
No, hang on.
Well, I mean, faces to faces. Because, but it's kind of but in real life faces
it.
To Zoom faces.
I know their
you
faces.
Mean,
we know their names.
Yeah.
IRL in real life.
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny, though, when you meet people in real life, though, because obviously everyone's sitting down on Zoom. You go, blimey, they're tall.
I know. And it's like, oh, you
And the
you
people
do
look
exist.
At you, they go, blimey, she's sure.
Yeah. It was really funny when we had our last Sunday lunch in Liverpool. People are normally used to see me either looking a little bit bedraggled on a Zoom call or in my hiking gear and me boots, you know, and me waterproofs. And the amount of people that went, oh, God, oh, wow, you look really well. And I'm like, are you trying to say that I look really shit most of the time? But I think there was a compliment in there somewhere.
Absolutely. Right. We need to go. Olivia, thank you so much. You, pizza, podcasts, this Sunday, Birmingham. Have a look at the trains now to Birmingham because it literally Lost and Found's 5 minutes from Birmingham New Street Station. Everywhere goes. Every single train that ever goes through Birmingham New Street, doesn't it?
Yeah,
isn't that how it works?
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. And also,
either Birmingham New Street or Crewe. Every train that I ever get on goes through Crewe.
Yeah.
I can be down south, but it'll go via Crewe and then back to wherever I am down there. Always.
Get involved. Drop us an email. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk, the place where we're hosting this event. It's brilliant. It is in the city centre. It's called Lost and Found. So don't worry about what you think you might have lost by
I knew you were going to go for a gag here.
Alcohol. Think about the things that you find when you make that decision.
Yeah.
See where I'm really tenuously trying to go with this.
I found that quite tenuous,
but
I like it.
It's
I like the effort. Yeah.
Get involved. Come on your own. Bring a friend, a partner. Our events are completely and utterly alcohol-free. And we would love to see your pizza podcast happening this Sunday in Birmingham. It all kicks off at midday, runs through until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Drop me an email today. You need to get on it today. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. As always, thank you for listening. Same time next week.